Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina, and this is a very special Capital Connection. Joining us this week is Karen DeWitt, Capital Correspondent for the New York Public News Network. She has been on the job reporting from the state capitol for 34 years, and she's now on the cusp of retirement. I can't tell you how much we're losing in terms of the institutional memory and historical context for what's happened at the state capitol over the last 34 years, but so thankful that we have her here with us this week. Welcome to the Capital Connection, Karen DeWitt. You're on the wrong side of the microphone this time.
Right. Well, thanks, David. I'm here to do my swan song, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, with such an experience at the state capitol and with the state of journalism, and we can get into that, you know, it's important for us to remember what it's been like in New York State's capital covering the legislature for such an extended period of time. How, Karen DeWitt, did you come to be the capital correspondent for New York State? And I know, obviously, that starts with WXXI.
That's right, actually. I know, it's a long and twisted road, actually. When I got out of college, very, very long time ago, I worked at some commercial stations around here, which, by the way, is excellent training. I know you come from commercial radio immediately. You just have to get up and perform all the time when you're doing commercial radio. And, you know, I was attracted to the Capitol. Those were the days of Mario Cuomo, the Assembly Speaker Stanley Fink. I think that Ed Koch was mayor of New York City then and would come up to Albany. And it just seemed like this cool place with larger-than-life people. Mario Cuomo was a national figure, and I was always interested in politics. And you know what? I couldn't get in the front door, so I got in the back door. A stringer job opened for 1010 Winds, the powerhouse all-news station.
Oh, yeah.
And I took that job and started writing for magazines, including Metroland, if people listening probably remember Metroland, Adirondack Life.
What about the Knickerbocker News?
I never wrote for the Knickerbocker News, but they were certainly influential in the day. Everybody read them when they came out at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, right? And in 1990, the public radio job opened. Someone else had started the bureau. It was only 2 years old. We had four stations. I don't think WAMC was even one of them then.
Mm.
I think it was WXXI in Rochester, where I had had an internship in college, and Buffalo, Binghamton, and WMHT, who did news in those days. WAMC joined a couple years later, and we just built it to like 10 stations. And I don't even know how. It's all a blur, David. You know, you ask me to do a retrospective on my work. And you know, the thing about doing certainly the daily news beat, especially on radio, it's very ephemeral. You just get up every day and you do it.
It's here and gone. And yet,
right,
something came along midway, maybe halfway. I don't know where you want to put it in our career, because I can't even remember that far back. The internet came in, and that changed everything for journalism.
That's right. In some ways, the politicians could get around us, so that's changed. We have less access. And actually, we have all, as journalists, had to work a lot harder.
We have to know how to spell.
We have to work with video now. Right. I did forget how to spell for about 20 years because it was all on the radio.
But why journalism for you, Karen? Is it because you had an interest in politics? What was it that drew you to this field?
Well, I guess I would have to say, why not? Because I actually never wanted to do anything else. It's been the easiest decision in my whole life. We had a television station at our high school, Burnt Hills Ballston Lake High School, with the great late Dandy Nicola, who was our teacher, very inspirational person. There's a lot of people in media in this area still because of his influence. And, you know, I was a classic underachiever high school kid, and that sparked an interest. And I really didn't like to do anything else. I would say I'm not really suited to do anything else in this life. So it's just been very easy. And I had the drive. I liked it. I wanted to do it. I showed up every day and just tried my hardest and somehow got through and ended up having a wonderful job for 3 decades.
And you joined the Capital Bureau at a time when you were one of the only women.
That's right. The Legislative Correspondents Association, the LCA, has really changed a lot. When I was there, there'd be most years maybe 2 or 3 women at the most. Sometimes I'd be the only one. It was really a man's world and really mostly a white male, middle-aged at that time. It seemed that way to me, world. But, you know, you adapt. Honestly, I liked working with the guys. Nobody gets into too much personal business at work. They would mostly sit around and just make fun of the politicians. Like, everything's a little bit sarcastic, a bit cynical. So I don't know. That certainly shaped my personality.
Well,
but these days, there's a lot of women, a lot of young women who are doing it. And it's changed the culture. And it's great, actually.
Politics and media have a similar kind of culture in a way.
Right.
Rough and tumble, maybe a little desensitized to a lot of the issues that we cover, which can be terrible and horrific. And,
well, you kind of have to at times.
Yeah.
You know, you really can't bring stuff home. Though that said, there have been times and things that I've covered where I do wake up at 3 a.m. and say, oh my God, did that really happen yesterday? You know?
Well, let's talk about one of those
right.
moments for a moment. I mean, you had a governor in Eliot Spitzer described as a white horse coming in at the time that he came in. He wanted to clean up Albany. And then one day you're rubbing your eyes and there's a headline in the New York Times that says he's been arrested in a prostitution sting.
Right.
I couldn't even believe it. I thought it said he had arrested somebody in a prostitution sting. And I wondered why the governor would be involved in that.
Right, because he used to be attorney general and he was going around, you know, busting prostitution rings. No, that was one of the most shocking days. I mean, we knew that it was a little bit rough with Eliot as governor, but people really liked him. In fact, confession here, I was offered a job in the Spitzer administration and I actually thought about it for 6 whole seconds, which is the longest I've ever thought about leaving journalism. And then I was like, nah.
What do they want you to do? Communications?
Yeah, it was like one of the agencies, yeah, communications. But I did think about it for like 6 whole seconds, which I guess shows that, you know, everybody thought well of him and just did not expect that he would, you know, really do something that reckless to ruin his career like that. And then seeing David Paterson being elected was pretty exciting. His first African-American governor. So it was like quite an amazing time, but he certainly struggled a lot with that job. There were a lot of crazy things that happened during the Paterson administration.
Including walking off the dais after accepting, you know, the governorship and going to the tabloids and immediately admitting to extramarital affairs and drug use and all sorts of things.
Right. That was his first press conference.
Yeah, right.
Yep, we went to it wondering what he would say. And I guess he just wanted to get that all out of the way so it wasn't in the tabloids. That was one of those nights that I woke up at 3 a.m. and said, did that really happen? There's just been a lot of dramatic, very dramatic days that it just fun to be a part of.
No question.
And it's democracy. As messy and crazy as it is, it's democracy.
Absolutely. And that fourth estate, as we mentioned briefly in the beginning, is part of it. I mean, if we don't have the antiseptic, the light, the journalism covering the politics, then we're not doing our jobs as part of what the Bill of Rights seems to consider as part of a democracy.
That's right. That's right. But we do have to have the access and we don't really have it in the same way. So it gets a little bit harder, it seems, every decade that goes along.
You're so right, because of the idea that they can go around us now. Submit your questions by email. I mean, none of this stuff would happen in the past. They didn't have the internet to bypass us. They had to do the interview or either not respond or say no comment.
Well, they have their social media feeds, they have their YouTube channels, and they can just go directly without having to answer pesky questions about, wait a minute, 1 and 1 does not equal 2, like you're saying, you know, there's something wrong here. And politicians are avoiding us a lot lately, especially at the Capitol right now with the atmosphere. And it may be because it's all Democrats in power right now, Senate, Assembly, and the governor. And so you don't have an opposition party controlling any of those 3 branches of government to speak up. I mean, the Senate Republicans and Assembly Republicans, God bless them, they do speak up a lot. But we know that they don't have the votes to get
That's
anything
right.
done. So you can't really use them as a foil or to illuminate what might be a fault in some of the policies that the others are proposing.
Which is why I keep asking the politicians these questions about why are these seemingly progressive Democratic pieces of legislation dying in the Assembly? We're speaking now on a week when we're about to wrap up session and it looks like some of the environmental legislation won't be going through. And if you don't understand the legislature, if you're not educated on what's going on, you might not even realize it. And this is the kind of thing you did for us all these years, at least certainly for our listeners and the listeners of public broadcasting and commercial radio across the state, begin to understand how the legislature works and the power arrangement and how and why certain legislation goes through and doesn't.
Well, it's a strange time right now, and it does seem like there's a little bit of a lack of leadership, a little bit of a vacuum since, you know, we had somebody who controlled everything, Andrew Cuomo, who went down in flames 2.5 years ago. But the Senate leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, holds a press conference every week. And we do ask her, you know, what's the status of these bills? And she and other senators have taken to saying, well, the Senate does our thing, the Assembly does their thing. And we'll say, is the governor involved? Well, no, I haven't spoken to her recently. And you know, I just say to myself, no, that's not how it's supposed to work. You need to get together.
Well, and also we know that what they say is what they say. We report what they say is happening.
Right.
You wonder what kind of background communication is going, behind the scenes communication is going on.
I think it's all about 2024, this election.
Yeah.
It's so tight between Trump and Biden that they're just like afraid to do anything, even progressive bills that some voters want. They don't want to do anything controversial. So it seems like right now, as we're talking, they're not going to do much of anything. I could be proven wrong next week. And that's what's actually been fun about this job. I'm often proven wrong and things surprise you.
Because you never know what deals get hammered out at the last minute. But at the same time, I think your prediction is probably going to be accurate. I mean, it's hard to get in an election year, especially a presidential election year, it's hard to get much substance done when it comes to those controversial issues.
That's right. Nobody wants to rock the boat. Nobody wants to stick their neck out.
Well, and I think one of the big issues that you've noticed over your career, I've noticed it over my career, and I don't think it starts at a high level, is how many people are actually paying attention. And if anything, it's gotten worse, it seems to me, over the years, that the general public, perhaps because we've become more cynical about it, but they're not paying substantive attention, not only to the legislature, but they probably don't even know who their legislators are.
I know. And I have to say, my loyal listeners say that to me now. And it's discouraging that they're just tuned out on politics and they don't seem as engaged as they were. And I have to say, that's a bit discouraging. And I hadn't experienced that until really the pandemic, post the pandemic, you know, the Trump era. People are just starting to turn off. And, you know, that's too bad because you can make a difference in government, but people don't believe it anymore. It's also so fragmented. You know,
yeah,
they're just
divided.
People, you know, believe what they want to hear. And, you know, public radio, we used to be it, right? We were like the source. And now it's like there's people will read things on Facebook and think that that's true. And I don't know how to counteract that, really. I really don't have a good answer for that.
I don't think any of us has a good answer for that, because if you lose veracity of information, you know, if you lose the idea that there are certain facts, certain things we need to agree on in order to work together to create a just society. We'll use that tenet.
Right.
We're in real trouble if we can't.
I know. It's like you don't have a society if you don't sort of have a common core of facts that you all agree on. I don't want to get depressing.
Well, and we're losing respect in our institutions, whether it be the legislature, whether it be healthcare, education, just go through the list, our justice system. You know, there's a problem when you lose faith in your institutions. And that's part of our observations of what's happening with politics and the state legislature and media.
And it's hard to know how to deal with it. Like sometimes I will try to highlight somebody's false information and then, you know, describe why that isn't accurate or that didn't happen. But I feel like sometimes even our great listeners will hear that and just hear the clip of the person saying the false information and think that that's true. So it's really hard to know how to deal with that.
Also, part of our jobs becomes always reporting the scandals, the negative things that happen. And so,
and we certainly had a lot of them. There's a lot of people that needed to be held to account, all the corruption that has gone on in the times that I.
Well, let's remind people.
Covered. Oh, do you have the list? Because I don't know if I can even remember them all.
Well, somebody who lasted a long time and was one of the most powerful people in New York State, the head of the Assembly, Shelley Silver.
That's right. Yes. Finally caught up with him. He'd kind of been leading a double whole life and doing all kinds of things and making deals on the sides and including
cash under the bed or in the closet.
I know. Really crazy stuff. But it wasn't really until we had the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, Preet Bharara, that tried to, you know, go after all of these people with mixed levels of success.
The so-called honest services law.
Right.
Now, that was a big thing that came, and the Supreme Court basically shot that down.
Yep.
And then caught within that was another very powerful leader of the Senate who was in power while Shelley Silver was in power, Joe Bruno.
Right, Joe Bruno. And I thought you were going to say Dean Skelos.
Oh, and Dean, Dean Skelos as well, another Speaker of the Senate.
John Sampson, I think that he got in trouble for something else. It's hard to remember them all. I really feel like
it's all running together.
All that stuff. But, you know, bad behavior was allowed until Preet Bharara and others started uncovering it because we kind of knew that stuff was going on. But, you know, it really takes actual prosecutor with powers to go after those people. And I have to say, you know, I'm naive, but I don't think legislative leaders are behaving that way right now. I mean, they've learned their lesson from, you know, what's happened to their predecessors.
At the same time, the Supreme Court shooting down that law still leaves it open in many ways for what we might call legalized bribery.
Yeah, it's just so hard to prove bribery unless you have a recording like here's, you know, $200. Please do this for me. So it's very difficult to prove, and that's always been a problem.
Well, I'll just use one of the most famous phrases in all of journalism history, follow the money.
Right. Boy, but they do a good job of hiding it.
You know her voice. She is Karen DeWitt. She's been the Capitol correspondent for the New York Public News Network, reporting from the state capitol for 34 years. Karen, what it comes down to over your time in the legislature, I'm wondering, which we just spoke about, is the idea of ethics, that when you have a legislature that has created one ethics commission after another, has talked a good game, it doesn't ever seem to really do much in substance.
No.
And one more commission doesn't seem like it's going to solve it either.
Yeah, we've been through so many ethics commissions, and now the current one, the former governor Andrew Cuomo, been suing them. And you know, it's certainly a strange arrangement right now. It's what, 6 law school deans choose the commissioners, which probably in retrospect was not a good idea. But yeah, they do not have a structure to police themselves because they're just afraid of what might happen if they get in trouble with something.
That's make the laws. Why would they make laws or rules to hurt themselves?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's self-interest. And yeah, it seems like at this point, people don't even seem to be pushing. Even like the government reform groups aren't pushing as hard as they were. But we haven't had a big corruption case in a while to draw attention to it either. So, but yeah, it's not good because over time they'll slip. Maybe now, like all these former legislative leaders have been put in jail, got into a lot of trouble. So everybody's, you know, not crossing those lines. But as time goes on, they might start crossing them again if they don't know that there's, you know, a cop on the beat, right? I mean, how fast would you go on the Northway if you knew like state police were like never there?
Faster than I should.
Right. Exactly. Everyone would. It's human nature.
But you're the cop on the beat in the legislature. And that means physically you go to these places and you haven't been able to get to all the places that you once used to.
Well,
right?
I was just going
to
say, I mean, that's another thing. The access on the assembly floor, you know, there'd be a day like, you know, maybe even today toward the end of session where I would just take a walk, go through the assembly chamber, go through the back hallway, see what lobbyists are hanging out, talk to a few key assembly members. I'd get back to my desk and I'd be like, okay, I've got the lay of the land. I know what's going on right now. But we're not really allowed access in the assembly chamber the way we were. We're not allowed access to the back hallway where the speaker's office is. And
what about the second floor?
Yeah, well, the second floor as well. You're really just not supposed to walk up
and
down.
Back in the day, you could go up there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And when you can't see people coming and going, you don't know what's going on. Although in the Capitol, even the day when we were allowed in those hallways, they do have a bunch of like secret passageways, elevators and things to get in and out. It's hard because I feel like that job, you need to be at the Capitol with the lawmakers, see what's going on. And we're getting less and less of that now.
Well, of course, we're running out of time way too quickly, but I want to get through some other big stories, of course, that have affected us. I want to start here, though. Remember the 2009 coup?
Oh, my goodness. It was Pedro Espada. One day, they just showed up in the Senate. That's when we had Blackberries. I remember my Blackberry lit up. Come to the Senate at 3 o'clock. You must come. And I ran over. And at first, I didn't understand what was happening. Because on the floor, they, like, shut off the mics. Other people got in. They banged the gavel. They said, now we're the leaders. I literally felt like it took my breath away. That was a very dramatic moment. And then you had, like, two competing Senate groups. And they would gavel in every day to session, and then the other ones would gavel in and they talk, you know, above each other, and nobody could really figure out how to solve the problem until.
And what one's legit?
Right. Neither of them were at that point until David Paterson was governor then. And he finally appointed Richard Ravitch as lieutenant governor because there was no lieutenant governor to make a tie vote, you know, break any kind of tie vote between these people. And that sort of settled it down.
And let's not forget, you mentioned BlackBerry, that there was this whole issue because we had to then decide what is a public record in New York, you know, as a journalist, if a politician is on their phone or doing emails and there's a record, a text, it's a public record.
Right.
Back then, we were finding out these BlackBerries would delete
the
messages.
The secret back channels on the BlackBerry.
Right.
And that was former Governor Andrew Cuomo was good at that.
Yes,
not
absolutely.
Having a record of his most personal conversations.
Which, of course, reporters would love to see. And
I
if
know.
You're the governor of the state, you would think that your communications would be public.
Well, that was the old days, David.
Yes. Let's fast forward a little bit. The pandemic hits, and we are in new territory. Now, for me as a journalist, I had to come here every morning. My routine did not change.
Yeah.
So it was much easier on my mental health than I know for so many other folks. But in many ways, we were considered essential workers.
Right. Okay. But wasn't it difficult, though, being like the only one in all of Albany going to work?
Yeah.
That
it was a ghost
great.
Town. It was weird.
And I did that the same thing going to the Capitol. It was all about Andrew Cuomo's daily briefing. Like, that just structured our day. Spend time getting ready for it.
And it became international. It was much watch, must listen.
All of a sudden, I was on a daily reality TV show and I was a bit part member. It was bizarre. And at the same time, like, at the high point when New York was the epicenter, 700 people were dying a day. So we'd go to the briefing, write it up, hear sirens outside of the silent downtown Albany. Mm. And then spend the rest of the day processing, oh my God, what is going on? What happened?
Well, of course, part of what was so dramatic about Andrew Cuomo is the dramatic rise and fall as a result of the pandemic. I mean, we were all, I think, soothed by his daily briefings. Mm-hmm. He has a way of talking to the, quote, family of New York.
Right. It brought out all his strong points.
It did.
It was just perfect for him to just, you know, be that voice, especially when we didn't have one on the national level with President Trump kind of sending mixed messages.
And he was a complete counterpunch to that because
right.
he would respond to Trump
right.
in some of those briefings
but, you know,
as well.
The larger picture is I remember when Andrew Cuomo was owning COVID, thinking, you know, he's up so high and he's associated with this and people are looking to him. When people start to get really dissatisfied and sick of this pandemic, they're going to blame him somehow or put the blame on him because he was the face of COVID. And the larger picture, I feel like that kind of happened the next year in 2021. Multiple scandals all of a sudden caught up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was out pretty suddenly. I mean, that was a little slower. It took 6 months from the time that Attorney General Tish James put out the report saying that he sexually harassed 11 women before he left in mid-August. But yeah, it was very, very stunning reversal of fortune.
Especially for such a political animal now. Do you think he's going to run for mayor of New York City like they're
suggesting?
Well,
I think he'd like to have a comeback. I mean, remember, he was dead in the water in 2002 when no one thought he would rise. But he built it back up. So who knows? But I do feel like New York State government is still sort of recovering from that. There's kind of a leadership vacuum, you know, because that had been the culture.
Well, part of that culture was fear, don't you think?
Well, yeah, certainly. That's been released now, right? Yes.
There's an art to governing, isn't it, in leadership?
Yes, there is. And you need to learn it.
If you had to think about 34 years covering New York State government and politics, and you look at the parties, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, what's the evolution of those parties?
The Republican Party is not what it was since Donald Trump took it over. And I think it used to be more collegial between Democrats and Republicans. We've certainly lost that, like everywhere has. And really, we're just in a strange time. It's hard to know the future of what the Republican Party is going to be. The Democrats have their own splits between progressives and moderates. In some ways, they're almost like two parties themselves.
Yeah,
they're like the old Democrats.
They've gone to their extremes.
Right. They're sort of like the old Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
And the Republicans are just way out there. So, yeah, it's definitely a different landscape.
And it's very strange because it doesn't seem, at least for the Republicans, like a smart strategy in a blue state like New York. Now, I get it.
Well,
Donald Trump
base.
Has changed.
Yeah, it's their base. And they don't want to be
base.
They don't want to be primaried from the right. So they're kind of stuck, too, in what they have to say and what they have to do. And we've seen it play out nationally. I don't know, David. We're just in a weird time. You know, I've always found that exciting. But like everybody, I'm a little worried about it right now. More than a little worried.
Karen DeWitt, finally, the question of redistricting.
Oh, goodness.
mean,
that would be the subject of a whole other show.
Are we in
show.
Trouble from the beginning, though?
Don't I mean, you think?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Well, right now, but, actually, there's the new congressional districts, they're all pretty competitive, or several, I should say several are competitive. So that's going to make it interesting to see, you know, whether New York is responsible for Democrats taking over the House or Republicans. Because of all those court cases and the Democrats overreaching where they tried to gerrymander the districts to benefit Democrats, but they went a little too far and it got thrown out by the Court of Appeals, that we do have some competitive districts. And that goes back to why maybe nothing's getting done right now. Everybody's scared. Everybody's in a holding pattern, wants to see what happens, how this all shakes out.
Well, she is Karen DeWitt, the soon to be, I can't believe I'm saying this, retired Capitol correspondent for the New York Public News Network, a long time career, someone who has been dedicated, has told the truth, informed us about what's happening in the New York State Capitol. And it's a valuable, valuable contribution that can't be replaced in the same way ever again. Karen, it's been a pleasure working as a colleague, and I can only wish you, as I know so many do, all the success in your retirement and future endeavors.
Well, thank you so much for your kind words. It's been an insanely awesome career.
The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capital Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capital Connection, I'm David Giustina. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.